Geek Radio Daily.
For halfway day. Halfway to a weekend where crazy things are happening. Some of us who have been working every Saturday since July no longer have to work on a Saturday.
What?
At least not this one. There's randomly karaoke. Mark's karaoke is a little early this time, so we're going to be singing this Saturday. What are you doing with your life? Come on out and play. We have Jackbox Friday. We have karaoke Saturday. What in the world? Come on, people. Get sociable. All right, you know, at least fake it, which is kind of what the online meetings are. Hi, welcome to the 1st of December. Yay, it's officially the holiday season. Go buy lots of stuff. Put yourself in debt. We're the fine folks from GeekRadioDaily.com. The folks bringing it to you today, the man that decided to show up with the last corporate meeting with no pants on. That there's podcasting, Rich Siegfried.
That's an attention getter.
That's what they say. And me, I'm the guy that knows exactly who he is. I'm the wonderful Billy Flynn.
I mean, I know I have a reputation of being a bit of a Lothario.
No, no one says that.
Undebatable. But the truth is, I'm kind of in a slump.
I'm working on it, though. What happened this fine day, sir?
Hey, you bring me into a meeting, you get what you get. 1877, construction begins of a working prototype of a phonograph from a set of drawings made by Thomas Edison.
What if you trace that? 1835, Hans Christian Andersen publishes his first book, of Fairy Tales.
1878, a telephone is first installed in the White House in Washington, D.C. by Alexander Graham Bell himself for the use of President Rutherford B. Hayes' administration. First call made on the telephone is between Hayes and Bell, 13 miles away. The first words he speaks into the phone are, "Please speak more slowly."
1885, a coffin is delivered to a Dr. Acula.
1887, first story to feature the fictional character Sherlock Holmes, A Study in Scarlet by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, is released. It's published by Beaton's Christmas Annual. However, the detective won't become popular until London's Strand magazine begins publishing Doyle's shorter stories in 1891.
We like it. We just like less of it. 1913, the Ford Motor Company opens the first moving assembly line in Highland Park in Detroit, Michigan.
1935, the first airway traffic controller center goes into operation in Newark, New Jersey.
1936, Bell Labs tests coaxial cable for television for the first time.
Also, the first U.S. patent for the soilless culture of plants in a large commercial hydroponicum is issued to Ernest Walford Brundin and Frank Farrington Lyon.
1948, the board game Scrabble is copyrighted.
1953, Birmingham, Michigan becomes the second community to be able to dial nationwide.
Whoa, 1955, the first remote control railroad passenger car goes into service.
1959, a camera mounted on the nose of a Thor missile launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, takes the first color picture of Earth from space.
1967, Queen Elizabeth inaugurates the 98-inch, 249-centimeter Isaac Newton telescope on La Palma in the Canary Islands.
1971, Project Gutenberg is launched by Michael S. Hart, a student at the University of Illinois, with the postings of the United States Declaration of Independence.
1977, the first commercial interactive television service, Cube, from Warner Communications, is launched in Columbus, Ohio.
1982, Atari begins producing games for the international marketplace at the company's facility in Ireland.
1987, NASA announces the names of four companies that have been awarded contracts to build Space Station Freedom: Boeing Aerospace, General Electric's Astrospace Division, McDonnell Douglas Astronomics, and Rocketdyne Division of Rockwell. Somebody's watching me international.
1991, Sega releases the Mega CD add-on for the Sega Mega Drive in Japan.
Couldn't have Night Trap without it. 1995, Atari begins shipping Missile Command 3D for the Atari Jaguar. The first 64-bit system, yeah.
Also, the first official version of the Apache HTTP server 1.0 is released.
Ask your nerdy friends. 1996, AOL begins offering its 7 million customers unlimited internet access for a flat rate of $19.95 a month, just what like 2 hours used to cost you on AOL.
1997, Jupiter, Mars, Mercury, Neptune, Pluto, Saturn, Uranus, and the Moon align from the west to the east in the night sky. The rare event is visible through December 8th. It will be at least another century before so many planets will be visible so close together from Earth.
Same day, same year, L4 Software first launches ICWin, an enormous web-based chronology of the history of video games and computers written by Don Thomas. It is the chronology that will inspire the creation of the Great Geek Manual blog. Rest in peace. We still have all your stuff. You live on.
1999, the National Human Genome Research Institute, a team of scientists from Canada, England, Japan, Sweden, and the U.S., announces that it has sequenced the first human chromosome in an article published in the journal Nature.
Same day, same year, the most expensive internet domain name in history, business.com, is sold by domain name investor Mark Ostrovsky for a record-setting $7.5 million to e-companies. Business.com would be sold again in 2008 for $345 million.
2003, the use of handheld cell phones while driving is made illegal in the United Kingdom.
2004, Lycos Europe releases a screensaver named Make Love Not Spam to help fight spam by keeping spam servers busy with requests and what some deem vigilante denial service of attack. This service will be discontinued within days in the midst of a controversy after Netcraft reports that it is responsible for a number of server crashes and backbone providers subsequently block access to the download site, which just tells me that you're all spam!
And in 2006, new federal rules go into effect requiring all U.S. companies to keep track of all electronic communications, including emails and instant messages generated by their employees.
Right, federal government? Birthdays?
Zoe Kravitz, 33, from X-Men First Class, After Earth, Mad Max Fury Road, Christina in Divergent, and Catwoman in Lego Batman, as well as Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Emily Mortimer's 51 from Scream 3, Hugo, Newsroom, and Mary Poppins Returns.
Sarah Silverman is 51. She's a stand-up comedian and was also appearing in There's Something About Mary, Run, Ronnie, Run, School of Rock, The Muppets, A Million Ways to Die in the West, and is fantastic in Wreck-It Ralph.
Nesta Carbonell is 54. From The Tick, Lost, The Dark Knight, Bates Motel, and puts eyeliner companies just out of business with his look.
Well, I mean, the problem is it's natural for him.
Exactly.
Treat Williams is 70. From Hair, 1941, Dead Heat, The Phantom, Deep Rising, and Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader.
No longer with us, but 1761, Marie Tussaud, French-English sculptor, founded Madame Tussaud's Wax Museum.
1897, Cyril Richard, Elrond in the 1977 Hobbit.
1926, Robert Simmons from Exorcist, Ice Pirates, Chud 2, Bud the Chud, and Catch Me If You Can. One of those kids is not like the other.
1929, David Doyle, Bosley in Charlie's Angels and Rugrats.
1940, Richard Pryor, hilarious man, was in Car Wash, The Wiz, Silver Streak, Stir Crazy, Superman 3, Harlem Nights, Lost Highway.
And closing it out, same year, 1940, Jerry Lawson designed the Fairchild Channel F video game console and basically invented the video game cartridge.
Richard Pryor's Channel F video game console was completely different.
Well, we can't say some of the words that were allowed on that. On CBS, we've got Do or Die, New Survivor, New Tough as Nails, Gil Grissom, and Sarah Seidel. Or Seidel, assist a team of investigators at the Las Vegas Crime Lab as they use the latest in forensic techniques to catch criminals who threaten the city and its people on a daily basis. That's the show.
I know, right? It's like, it's just another episode, right? ABC's got a new
probably new CSI Vegas.
There's Wonder Years, Connors, Home Economics, and Stay on a new Million Little Things.
I mean, in fairness, the CSI shows, they are formulaic. They figured it out. It works for them. So that actually is applicable every episode. NBC is the 89th annual Christmas in Rockefeller Center, and Kelly Clarkson presents When Christmas Comes Around.
Fox is the Masked Singer, followed by Alter Ego.
CW, Bebo tries to save the Christmas holiday when he, Sprinkles, and his friends visit the North Pole to determine what makes Christmas truly meaningful. In Bebo Saves Christmas.
Freeform is trying to counter program with Home Alone and Home Alone D.
And if that's not enough for you, AMC has four Christmases.
Oh, FX has Office Christmas Party, but it's not the Office Christmas Party.
Oh. FXX has The Simpsons Marathon with Pork and Burns, The Great Fatsby Part 1.
FXM with Expendables 2 and 3. You saw the first one.
Oh, they're fun, though. Paramount has Coming to America. Damn fine movie.
Siffy, a member of the group, needs urgent medical attention, so the Hemlock stops at Candy's home planet, but it seems that their new destination is in for quite a bit of trouble once they land on a new intergalactic planetary. But we're watching the Lifetime Movie Network. A woman falls for the charming firefighter who saved her from a near-fatal blaze, and a woman's wedding day turns into a chilling ordeal when she is kidnapped by her fiancé's unhinged ex-girlfriend, who insists she's just trying to save the other woman's life by preventing her from marrying her dangerous ex-lover. Brittany Underwood and Camilla Browis star in Fatal Fiancé.
The wonderful Billy Flynn looks at what Chad and Abby are up to now. If you know what TV show they're on this week, you could win yourself a prize. It's your Further Adventures of Chad and Abby update.
Marlena is a wealthy divorcee who wants to get some revenge on her ex-husband. She asked Chad to get some adult pictures of her ex's new girlfriend. Now, at first, Chad's like, I ain't doing that, but a beating from some roughnecks gets him back up on that case. Now, see, Marlena's being vicious. I mean, she was supposed to be the one and only. She's not some summer girl fling. Newsbreak, she will do whatever it takes to get what she wants. Hashtag Chappy. Forever.
Don't you have a letter to read or something?
Hi, geeks. I've only been awake a few minutes when you mentioned Matt Berry for a role. Damn my ADD. Why is that name familiar, I thought. Then you quoted about the electric sex pads, and I realized he's the founder's son on the IT Crowd. And multiple roles in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is hilarious, varied, and undeservedly obscure from the UK, and also features Richard Ayoade. And he's now most known for What We Do in the Shadows, another fun show. I mostly miss LeVar Burton because Roots, Next Gen, and Reading Rainbow were on during years when my access to TV was very limited and unreliable. But I agree, he's ideal for Jeopardy. Now, if only I can learn, again, how to find out what's on broadcast TV. When? Stay safe. That is from Bill. Well, gosh, Bill, if only a couple of nut jobs who just keep doing the same damn show for 14 or 15 years had some way of telling you what's coming on TV. Gosh! If you've got an idea of how Bill can find out, drop us a note at podcast@geekradiodaily.com, or, of course, a voicemail or text message. Either one will work. Use the magic numbers.
510-GRD-CROW.
They still make TV God, don't they?
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Hey, this is Katie Sackhoff, and you're listening to Geek Radio Daily.
Awesome. Awesome indeed. That was such a pleasant day.
Actually, I'm looking for a Batman number 14.
That's a very serious book, man.
And they're out.
At your local neighborhood comic shop, what's on the shelves, sir?
From Detective Comics, we've got Batman the Detective wrapping up at 6. Hardware, Season 1, 3 of 6. Human Target, 2 of 12. And Millennia Ago, Queen Hera and the Goddesses of the Olympian Pantheon grew greatly dissatisfied with their male counterparts, and far from their sight, they put a plan into action. A new society was born, one never before seen on Earth, capable of wondrous and terrible things. But their existence could not stay secret for long, when a despairing woman named Hippolyta crossed the Amazon's path. A series of events was set in motion that would lead to an outright war in heaven and the creation of the Earth's greatest guardian. In Wonder Woman, Historia, the Amazons, 1 of 3.
Over in Marvel, it's Avengers number 50, Phoenix Song, Echo, number 2 of 5, X-Men, The Trial of Magneto, 4 of 5, wait, is this the 80s? But the King of the Inhumans breaks his silence. Black Bolt's mighty voice is his greatest gift, and since childhood, it has been his greatest curse. Recruited with 4 other heroes to read from the Darkhold, a powerful evil text written by the elder god Chthon, Black Bolt thought he was signing up for a battle befitting a king, but the true battlefield is his own mind in Darkhold. Black Bolt, number 1.
From Dark Horse Comics, we've got Hellboy, The Bones of Giants, 2 of 4. Sir Edward Grey Acheron, 1. It's a one-shot. From Boom Studios, we've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 32. Dark Blood, nearing its run of 5 of 6. And Dune, House Atreides, number 12. But when the fate of the multiverse is at stake, boy, everybody's got a multiverse nowadays, what game will the scheming master of metal play? Tezzeret of Esper, the cruel artificer now free from his former master, Nicol Bolas, the godfather of Amonkhet, has traveled across the multiverse seeking the answers to a question only he knows. How to pronounce names, perhaps. Once he finds it, he will manipulate anyone necessary and to do whatever it takes to claim his prize. But to what end? In Magic, Master of Metal, number 1.
At IDW Publishing, it's Snake Eyes, Dead Game Declassified, number 1, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 123, Transformers, Shattered Glass, number 4 or 5, over at Image, it's Shoo, number 10, Deadly Class, number 49, Hellcop, number 2, and the world's greatest secret agent has 6 months to live. Does he die quietly in the hospital bed, or does he make up for a lifetime of bad decisions? He's been propping up an unfair system for over 40 years. Now, he knows where all the bodies are buried and has nothing to lose when he turns his guns on everyone, whoever ever made a buck creating the mess that we're in right now in King of Spies, 1 of 4.
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Geek News!
Taking a look at the world from a geeky point of view. They've been one of the coolest animated bands for more than 20 years now, with 7 studio albums, a web series, and a crossover with Powerpuff Girls. Now, Gorillaz is getting a movie. The animated avatars who represent the real-life band have a complicated history that superfans have tracked from their self-titled debut, but the movie will expand their stories into a feature-length narrative.
Does this mean there will actually be some understandable sense of their canon?
David Elbart, formerly of the Britpop band Blur, created Gorillaz with artist and musician Jimmy Hewlett in 1988. Hewlett designed the characters for the band using the signature cartooning style he developed for his seminal comic series Tank Girl, which is incredible. Producer Remy Kabaka Jr. joined later, and over the years, Gorillaz have collaborated with numerous other recording artists ranging from Mos Def to Danger Mouse. They even had Dennis Hopper record a lengthy voiceover for a track on their second album, Demon Days.
They didn't get Clint Eastwood? That's a shame.
The fictional band is composed of lead singer, 2D bass player Murdoch, a drummer named Russell, and lead guitarist Noodle. For a while, the bassist was Ace, the leader of the Gangrene Gang from the Powerpuff Girls, when Murdoch was in prison, though. Murdoch has since rejoined the band. Noodle was also briefly replaced with a cyborg version of herself.
See what I mean about canon?
Hopefully, Hewlett gets a chance to shine, as his animation is truly gorgeous and deserves a much wider audience. The best way to stay true to Gorillaz' eclectic roots might be to go with an anthology, changing animation styles between stories or character perspectives. Well, look, whatever they decide to do, it will be a blast seeing Gorillaz grooving on our own screens, courtesy of Netflix, and we'll all feel good. Incorporated.
Coming from a franchise full of cameos and Easter eggs, IDW's Ghostbusters cleverly made John Candy's forgotten role as Lewis Tully canon. Now, the famous actor and comedian had been the original choice to portray Dana Barrett's neighbor and later Keymaster, but had left the project due to creative differences. Although the role would be portrayed by actor Rick Moranis, the creative team behind the IDW series, Eric Burnham and Dan Schoening, couldn't resist giving John Candy's interpretation a second life as a resident of 55 Central Park West during another massive supernatural event.
John Candy is awesome, but Moranis killed it.
When it came time for casting for the 84 film, director Ivan Reitman approached the SCTV comedian to portray the nerdy accountant and oblivious neighbor to Sigourney Weaver's Dana Barrett. Reitman did not agree with his ideas on how to portray him, specifically with the German accent and multiple German Doberman pinschers. John declined the role, and it would be offered to his SCTV colleague, Rick Moranis. Candy, of course, would make a cameo in Ray Parker Jr.'s iconic Ghostbusters music video as one of the many celebrities.
It's not as weird as Peter Falk and Terry Garr, though.
Why? I just have one more question.
Who are you going to call?
In Ghostbusters number 4 by Eric Burnham, Don Schoening, and Louis Delgado, the Ghostbusters are dealing with a surge in paranormal activity brought on by the arrival of Idulness, a demon who acts as the third minion of Gozer, who desires to change the famous Destructor's fate. After his kidnapping of Ray Stans does nothing to change Gozer's form as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, Idulness dissipates, leaving the Ghostbusters to deal with the vengeful Marshmallow Colossus once again. With his teammates having brought his latest mega trap, the guilt-ridden Ray sprints into action, climbing down flights of stairs until he kicks down the door of Dana's former apartment, greeting the apartment's terrified yet familiar current occupant.
Well, as long as SCTV doesn't exist in the Ghostbusters universe.
The gentleman in Dana Barrett's old place is clearly John Candy. But Burnham and Schoening, of course, had to take some liberties while imagining this brief but awesome tribute. This version of Louis Tully, whose real name is never given, appears to be an amalgamation of Candy's role as Del Griffith from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and his role as Dean Andrews Jr. in JFK. While a German accent is hard to convey on paper compared to the big screen, his likeness to the famous comedian and actor is unmistakable, and his pair of German pups only confirm his identity further.
Would have been cooler if it was Johnny LaRue.
Although the popular comedian did pass away in 94, it's nice to see Candy's memory continuing to live on, especially in a franchise made by people who personally collaborated with him and remember him fondly. Plus, at least it's not Ron Jeremy.
Whether we're talking about the dark side of stock photography or images you won't be able to unsee, the internet seems almost obsessed with these tasteless crimes against photography. Such lousy pictures really stand out from the crowd. Over-exaggerated emotions, questionable settings, poor editing, the list just goes on. Bad stock photos have the rare quality of capturing our attention, and examples of workers falling at their jobs are a source of pure comedy gold.
As someone who regularly uses stock photos, I can't tell you what the meaning of some of them are. What were they?
People all across the internet are laughing at images of librarians poking at computer screens, astronomers in lab coats looking at the sky, or marketing managers taking meetings fully dressed
at the beach via a viral Twitter hashtag, hashtag bad stock photos of my job, users share absurd interpretations of their professions.
Oh, my favorite is, I always give a thumbs up after a pelvic exam. It's not creepy at all.
Makes me happy. Since you could never get enough of such posts, Bored Panda has collected a variety of strange and funny pictures from this hashtag. You can check out the show notes to see the link and add your own comments to them, though sadly they don't have any of Simu Liu stock shots in them. But you can see someone soldering a zipper on a pair of pants while they're wearing them. Something we don't advise you to do. Well, most of you.
The world's first living robots are now capable of something that's essential to the survival of any species. Reproduction.
Nope.
Known as xenobots, the organisms use an entirely novel form of biological self-replication, according to a new research in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The study authors discovered that the machines can gather hundreds of single cells and assemble them into baby xenobots. After a few days, the offspring evolve to look and move just like their parents. The progeny can then repeat the process over and over again.
Who the hell thinks this is a good idea?
People have thought for quite a long time that we've worked out all the ways that life can reproduce or replicate, said study co-author Douglas Blackiston, the senior scientist at Tufts University, in a statement. But this is something that's never been observed before. The millimeter-wide xenobots are assembling from living cells scraped from frog embryos.
I don't remember John Connor in Jurassic Park.
Confined to petri dishes, their lives are very different from those of their amphibious ancestors. But we're putting them into a novel context. We're giving them a chance to reimagine their multicellularity, said Michael Levin, a biologist at Tufts University and co-leader of the new research. Independently, a xenobot can produce children, but the system normally dies soon after. To give the parents a chance to see their kids grow up, the researchers turned to AI.
I'm starting to see why some people don't have faith in science.
The team used an evolutionary algorithm to test billions of potential body shapes in simulation. The system was designed to find forms that would be effective for the self-replication method. One of the eye-catching creations resembled Pac-Man. It's very non-intuitive, said Sam Kriegman, the lead author of the new study. It looks very simple, but it's not something a human engineer would come up with. Why one tiny mouth? Why not five?
Sure. Why not five mouths? Add seven lasers as well.
And 12 bone crusher drills.
The researchers then built a xenobot in this shape and tested its child-rearing skills. They discovered that the AI-designed parent could use its Pac-Man-shaped mouth to compress stem cells into a circular offspring. Their children then built grandchildren who built great-grandchildren who built great-great-grandchildren. A xenobot dynasty was taking shape.
And then Joan Collins came in and ruined everyone's day.
Although the xenobots could previously work in groups, self-heal, and even record memories, this is the first time they've been able to raise a family.
Any word on the robotic bill of rights we spoke about? Asimov's laws? Anything?
That may evoke terrifying visions, rightfully so, of self-replicating robot swarms. But the researchers envision more optimistic outcomes. They believe their system could advance numerous technologies, from living machines that clean up microplastics to new medications. And I'm sure they are also hoping that they will be viewed favorably by our future robotic overlords.
Outside of the Matrix, the only food they had is a protein gruel that the cruel Nebuchadnezzar likened to runny eggs, or less flatteringly, a bowl of snot. But if you prefer your eggs fluffy and scrambled, then get ready to head back into the Matrix by way of Denny's.
But didn't you already mention runny eggs and bowl of... never mind.
On Cyber Monday, Denny's started a new promotion tied to the upcoming Warner Brothers movie release, The Matrix Resurrections. The promotion runs from now till January 4th of 2022 and will enable hungry cinephiles to jack into the Matrix through Denny's.com or the restaurant's app. There you'll experience the proverbial glitches in the Matrix, not as deja vu, but as discounts and free menu items.
A glitch at Denny's is probably not what we should be talking about after that previous story.
From now until December 12th, they're offering free delivery on digital orders. Since they do deliver, that means you could theoretically eat food from Denny's at home while watching The Matrix Resurrections on HBO Max. You know, maybe we're halfway in the Matrix as a culture. Remember when Cypher, Joey Pants, said to Agent Smith, Hugo Weaving, I know this steak doesn't exist. I know that when I put it in my mouth, the Matrix is telling my brain it's juicy and delicious. And after 9 years, you know what I realize? Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, so is not eating at Denny's unless you are drunk and it's still the same day you woke up.
The Matrix Resurrections grand slams its way into theaters and onto HBO Max on December 22nd. Out of all the food crossover options, I guess Denny's is a good one. After all, I look forward to trying their loaded neo-tots, the lumberjack and slam and Morpheus over Miami. GRT is licensed under Creative Commons attribution, the commercial non-derivative works, United States 3.0 license. Come check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. Stop by the website at geekradiodaily.com. I swear to God, I would order the Morpheus over Miami. I really would.
Right. My question is, are they only going to have like blueberry syrup and then like the strawberry syrup? So you just got the red and the blue?
Are you blueberry or strawberry on this? Sure. Hey, let us know which way you'd go with that. And according to the new trailer, how that probably doesn't mean what it used to, drop it on the podcast at geekradiodaily.com. Of course, voicemail, text message, use the numbers.
510-GRD.
Blah, 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 blah.
Peace out, player.
It's only a game. Why you have to be mad?
Good night, suckers.
Listen, ladies, it's been real and it's been fun.
But has it been real fun?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Captain Liberty, are you aware of the seriousness of the charges against you?
Yes, sir.
As the symbol of everything that is good and decent in this great nation of ours, to appear naked wearing only thigh-high motorcycle boots.
Let the record show their go-go boots.
Whatever. Liberty, before we decide whether or not to court-martial you, is there anything you'd like to say on your behalf?
Yes, sir. I believe the man that took those pictures was a spy.
General... If it pleases the court...
Who the hell are you?
I am Bad Manuel.
Make it fast.
Bad Manuel never makes it fast. That is, unless the husband is in, you know. Anyway. General, your national anthem, is it not America the Beautiful?
No.
That might be a mistake, but it's not for Bad Manuel to judge.
What are you doing here?
Would you not agree that as the embodiment of America's commitment to truth, that Captain Liberty herself is subject to the Freedom of Information Act?
Objection.
Overruled.
Thank you. You say it's a disgrace to this country that its symbol can be seen in the flesh. But is she not also the symbol of an open society that is the envy of every nation on earth? And therefore, as that very symbol, I ask you, would it be appropriate for Captain Liberty to be photographed in anything less than the nude? In fact, isn't it an insult that she's not naked right now?